they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole we found. And I was thinking,
hi, this is Nico. You're listening to My Dad Rafal, also known as the White Rabbit and James Jardine on the one and only Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Buckle up and enjoy.
Deep into this pool. The critical situations. Pitch black, think back to the last time that we were happy.
All right, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome down the Security Rabbit Hole to another edition of the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Welcome aboard, everybody. Good to see you. Good to hear from you. And hope you can hear us well. I think we're going to call this Tuesdays with Tuma, except it won't be every Tuesday because I can't afford Sean's billable rate. But James is back from being here, ironically.
I know. Ironically, I was up visiting. I missed the last podcast because I was in Atlanta.
Yeah, you were right here. And Mr. Tuma, welcome back, man.
Thank you. Howdy from the great state of Texas. Howdy.
I see you got your curtains closed. What's the your blinds closed there? What's your weather looking like? Is it dismal like here?
Yeah, we're getting some rain and some thunderstorms today. Had some last night. All kind of interesting stuff going on with the weather here.
Did you get a chance to get out and see the stare at the solar eclipse?
I did. Yeah. As a kid, I was in my father's shop while he welded, and I learned back then not to look at things like that without a
smart man
protection over my eyes. So I knew not to stare at it without the glasses. Those $2 glasses are amazing. Better than the stuff you get at the sunglasses.
I thought you were going to say that you pulled out a welder's helmet and looked at
it. That's what I was going to say. You can probably see it through a welder's helmet.
Yeah, if I'd have had one here, but I didn't bring that part of my redneck heritage with me to Dallas.
That would have been a fantastic photo. I can't believe somebody didn't do that to get a whole bunch of people with welder's helmets and like the overalls. All out there together looking up at this thing.
Staring at this.
Yeah, like it looked like a bunch of aliens looking at it, waiting for it to happen. Like that would have been a fantastic photo.
It would have been.
James, you got a couple more years. 2044, 2045 is the next time you're going to be widely across the U.S. So, you should be able to.
You're going to start organizing now. Yeah.
Start planning.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Well, it is April 9th when we're recording this, so that means you guys are listening to this a week later, or some far into the distant future. If it's like 2075 or 2775, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know how that ended, but I'm sorry.
That'd be amazing if somebody was listening to this in 2775. Like that.
You know, maybe. I've seen the movie Time Machine enough times to where know that probably at some point something will survive in some archives somewhere. So I figured if we store this podcast in enough formats in enough places, maybe somebody will recover it one day and go, you know, wow, these limited beings could only think three dimensionally and they didn't know all of all the other stuff that they've discovered. Okay, that's weird segue.
Yeah, we're archive worthy, right?
Now that you're on the show, Sean, 100%. Get into National Archives. We're a treasure. Hey, listen, we're 14, coming up on 15 years running. I think that stands for something.
That
gives us something. Anyway, all right. So it's been a minute since you've been on, Sean. What kinds of fun things have transpired in the legal cyberspace?
Oh, Lord. So we're still staying busy on incident response.
No kidding. So
my breach first responder, breach quarterback role, whatever we call it these days, is still the vast majority of my day job, what I do. We're at war, right? Everybody's looking for the cybersecurity fix. Give me the fix. Give me the solution. man, we're at war. There's no solution to war. You got to keep fighting it. It's ongoing. It's a process. Yeah, you know,
just ask the Ukrainians.
And we're seeing still a lot of ransomware. You know, what we're seeing a little different now,
okay,
is it's not so much the encryption type attacks as it is the data theft. So the threat actors are getting in, they're unnoticed, they're stealing data, and then they're out. And maybe when they get out, sometimes they'll give you a little encryption goodbye on their way out the door. But they're getting very impatient on their threats.
Oh, lovely.
And they're publishing data very quickly. Sometimes we're seeing it published within 2 or 3 days. Ah. And, you know, and they know what they're looking for. They're very strategic. They're looking for employee data because they know it'll disrupt your organization. They're looking for insurance, evidence of insurance. They're looking for, you know, profits and loss statements, financials, things like that, because they want to know how much you can pay. And so we're seeing them call employees. We're seeing them call individuals or email them and make direct impact as leverage. So they're really getting a lot more aggressive in that sense.
You know, it's interesting, Sean, you mentioned that about the calling the employees directly. You know, we talked about this, I don't know, a few months ago, Raph. You know, they had that one hospital, it was like a cancer center or something,
yeah,
where the people were then like swatting the patients,
yeah,
to try, you know, to try to force that change. And then there was something else, and gosh, I forget what it is now, but there was something close to that where they were doing something very, I think maybe it was the filing of the SEC reports. Like, listen, if you're not going
to
file it,
threatening to call the SEC,
we'll file for you.
Yeah, and report you. Yeah. And which shows you the state of where we are on the regulatory standpoint, right? With the victim shaming, attacking the victim now of the crime. And the criminals know they have more leverage sometimes by going to a regulator who's going to come after the company than they do by just going after the company directly.
So we talked about that, I think, a little bit too. I think the last time you were on, Sean, or I don't know, these podcasts all start to blend together because we've been doing so many of them. But there was an episode back where we talked about there's a potential switch coming between just purely holding your data for ransom on your device into a blended hold it for ransom, but also let's move to extortion, to more of an extortion leading the way, threatening to release the information they've stolen from you to your competitors, to the world, to shame you, to cause you regulatory pain, to cause you legal pain. Is that fully in flight now, you think?
Yeah. Yeah. So the trend, you know, in the early years, it was encryption. And then, you know, 2019, 2020, we started seeing a growing trend of data theft, but not predominant. It evolved, you know, in 21, 22, and then in 23, we started seeing a lot more data theft.
Okay.
And now we've started seeing a lot more where it's just data theft and not even the encryption, because it's like they don't have to work as hard with data theft. You know, they tell you, oh, you know, pay us and we'll delete the data. Well, we know better than that. But I mean, you know, for many times, not always for sure, but, and, you know, and they're going to use whatever leverage they can.
It yeah. cuts down on the risk though, right? I mean, if I stop encrypting, right, I don't have to worry about shutting the hospital down. I don't have to worry about shutting the pipeline down. Like those riskier scenarios where they're sending that stuff out and maybe they didn't target a hospital but went to a hospital, that it's like, all right, you've crossed the line. We're coming to look for you.
That's a good point.
Now, James, it's just, hey, wow, we're just looking at data. Like, okay, you know, they stole data. We all know how that's going to go. Like, tag the company and, you know, everybody moves on with their lives. But you've removed the physical element of a lot of that risk. And you're not going to be seen as quick, right? I mean,
less likely to be going
You're not leaving the malware behind that's going to be used to trace, you know, the organization. And, you know, it is interesting when you watch these trends. I mean, you know, you mentioned, you know, the pipeline, Colonial Pipeline, and that fabulous episode we did right after that. You remember that was a great one. But, the you know, you that set a trend of the supply chain, you know, and the impact of all, it was like a watershed moment of bringing supply chain risk to the forefront, like we saw with Home Depot and Target, of being a watershed moment for data breach, right? Yeah. Because now you look at you know, Change Healthcare and United in that situation, that's the same attack we saw on Colonial Pipeline that shut down transportation in half the country. This attack on a common point shut down payment processing in virtually all the country, you know, or a vast majority of it. And so I think Change is going to be a watershed moment for bringing that to light, at least within healthcare.
So I got to say, because these watershed moments, I want to have like out behind the tool shed moments, right? Like, where do we get to that? When we get to that, because here's the process. Something major happens. And I don't want to debate the how they got there, right? Did they not do the right security measures? Is some executive responsible? Is it some intern that forgot to click a button? Whatever. They got there. Okay. That's the important thing. They're there. Something happens. It goes from bad to really bad to holy hell. They get dragged in front of Congress to testify and explain themselves, and the news outlets get to them, and boy, they're just the worst. And how could they have done this? And then 3 weeks later, they're like, wait. Okay, now what? Nothing happens. Nothing freaking happens. And I'm not saying they need to be sent to jail or whatever. Where accountability is still lacking. Like, I teach my kids, right? If somebody hits you and you hit them back and you get caught, you have to be accountable for that. Like we were just talking, own it. Like, this is the thing that you did. Nobody made you do it. Right. So you're a company, you get breached, you have a massive impact on its supply chain, on quality of life, on the ability to sustain a community, whatever. There should be some sort of accountability, and there doesn't seem to be.
Well, there will be some, right? There's already a tremendous number of lawsuits that are brought that'll get pursued. And ultimately probably settled for substantial amounts of money. There is an investigation by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office of Civil Rights, which is another watershed moment, in that typically we see them investigating the covered entities, which would be, you know, the healthcare providers themselves.
Yeah.
Here they're investigating the vendor, if you will.
Yeah.
But you know, the other struggle I have is I think we can be more secure and strive to be more secure and mature in our security, but I no longer believe we can be – I don't know that I've ever believed that we can be secure.
Right. Agreed.
In quotes, right? We are seeing cases where clients are getting hit with 0 days on firewalls and things of that nature before they're even being put out by CISA.
Okay.
They were doing everything they could.
Yeah.
I mean, they were doing, you know, and I work with companies very similar to United/Change, and I know the effort they put into it. I know they're doing everything we're asking. They're just fall into that, you know, they got to be right 100% of the time. The hacker needs one lucky shot to find a way in. And now it's happening through, you know, through tools, through the supply chain, through, yeah. You know, I mean, look at MoveIt last year, all the impact that caused, yeah, that you know. And
dumpster Sean, fire.
Out of all those investigations that you were listening happening, how many of those are actually investigating the people that did the attack?
Oh, well, so that's a different arm, right? So we've got regulatory investigations into the victim companies. Then we have the law enforcement investigations into the threat actor groups that are doing this. And you know, I'm speaking totally just as a random observer of things here, but, you know, I have a feeling that our law enforcement has a lot more capabilities than most people think. And that many times they have the ability to know some of this, of who's behind what. And it's better to just not burn their relationship or whatnot until it's really worth it. But I mean, remember Colonial Pipeline. Right after that very large ransom was paid, within a matter of like hours, it seemed like the threat group was gone. You know, the FBI got them, or through their partners right. in other countries. And then you look at the situation with the $20 million payment to United. I mean, it's like as soon as that money went through, the threat actors just, they're like, oh shit, what did we do? We're out. Bye. You know? And it's like the dog chasing the UPS truck.
Yeah.
You know, it bark, bark, bark. And as long as you're hitting small to medium targets and you're not really disrupting too much, it's one thing. But when you hit the right target, man, it's like, uh-oh, what did we just do? And then, you know, they pay a price for it. So I think our law enforcement has a lot more capabilities through a lot of this than we probably understand and know. It's just they're having to be really strategic on when they use
it. But that causes a lot of the issue, though, right? Of, I mean, we can only do so much. We're never going to be 100% secure. I mean, I can put a fence around my pool. Yeah. Somebody can climb over it. And yet still somehow that's my fault. You know what I mean? Like that's how we look at it in the cyber world is you can do all that stuff. You can put your firewalls up. You can do all these things. But if somebody gets in, that's still your fault. And, you know, they'll probably never get caught, but we're going to ring you through the ringer on this.
Yeah. And I also want to say, thank God if our law enforcement does have those advanced capabilities, because I would much rather them keep those safe and secure for when they need it to protect our infrastructure and our water supply and all that, than some, you know, $500,000 payment to the bad guys.
Yeah, but you know? I agree with all that, right? That makes a lot of sense to me. Here's where I start having real issues. We crippling our healthcare system, for lack of a better term, right? There are places that have legitimately gone out of business. This disproportionately impacted veteran services. I mean, they're still not 100% recovered. It has been a while. What we're exposing is, God, I feel like this is a conversation we have every couple of months, every couple of years. We're exposing the weakness of the interconnectedness of IT, right? All these single points of failure. It's like, when Amazon DNS goes down, suddenly you can't reach Netflix, you can't reach your bank, you can't reach Twitter, you can't go to complain about it, you can't do something like binge watch something while you're waiting for it to come back. You can't get to your bank. You're like, well, hell, life I guess is just going to stop for a minute. But how could this happen? It's the cloud. It's ultra resilient. Like, well, it's not though.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, technology and the internet's the problem, right? That's what makes 100%. All this so easy. It's also what makes all this work.
Yeah.
Last week, I was speaking at an oncology conference, and they kept, you know, obviously the Change Healthcare situation was a hot topic, and a common theme I kept hearing and being asked about was, is this indicative of the problem of vertical integration in these, you know, in this industry, in the healthcare industry, and were there antitrust issues or things like that?
Wow.
Of course, I had no idea. I'm not an antitrust lawyer. But we do see that, right? And look, for years, we've been arguing for cloud or managed services because you're getting, you know, at least for small to mid-size. And one thing that's really hit me lately, there is a vast difference between security for small and mid-size organizations and security for very sophisticated enterprises. Those are two completely different worlds. For the small to mid-size, we've been arguing for using expertise in clouds and managed services that have a much higher degree of expertise, because that's better than having your IT guy trying to do it all on your, you know, server in the basement. And so we've pushed for that, but now it's like we're getting what we've asked for, but we've found the threat actors have yet again adapted in their tactics and have realized, oh, if you're all going to go use that, then we're going to hit that, knock that out. Now you're all screwed. Right. And so is the reaction going to be we're now going to revert back to more localized, you know, less dependent on these common providers? I don't know that we can go that route.
Well, so look, not to take too many tangents, but I'm going to completely tangent.
What we're here for.
What's that?
That's what we're here for.
Completely.
We're going down the rabbit hole.
Aligned, but and tangential. There's a headline recently about it says CISA releases cyber incident reporting rule draft. And both Andrew Storms and Chris Hoff had the same reaction. 447 freaking pages. I had one comment to this. I'll take things nobody will ever read for 1,000, please, Alex. What the crap?
Yeah, I haven't read it. I've read
Nobody's
the hot
gonna
points.
Read that. Get out of here.
Chat GPT, give me the summary.
Summarize 447 pages of things that I care. Look, this is the thing. Like, and you know, adding. Look, this is already hard enough. Okay, we've talked about it. You're not going to get to secure. You're going to get to some level that's good enough, and then you're going to start tuning. We should have been at this 5, 7, 8 years ago. Maybe now the industry will forget cyber. Maybe the people around cyber, the CIOs and the CTOs that have to deal with the cybersecurity organization directly. Maybe the realization comes from this series of just constant, no matter what we do, we're getting popped. And oh my God, it's catastrophe every time. It isn't if, it's when, and then what. Like the and then what part is super important.
The resilience part.
It's becoming crystal clear that we have spent entirely too much effort in the last 20 years on preventative measures, and there is very little. And so then what if bad things happen? And for those that say, well, you know, where's the evidence of that? In the news every day, company gets ransomwared, right? Everything stops and you're helpless. We have technology for this. There should be plans for this. The plan for a cybersecurity incident should not be if security fails, we're bleeped, right? It should be okay if security fails. The reality is, here's what we should do.
So the challenge there, and number one, I think the primary reason behind the you know CISA reporting requirements is there's no general requirement to report these events to law enforcement under the laws, and law enforcement wants this information because that empowers them, right, and helps them do their job better. And so we're trying to get mandatory reporting. And if you remember the COVID restrictions, they can use critical infrastructure to reach down and touch just about everything. And my prediction is that's what we're going to see here. Critical infrastructure was the premise for the COVID requirements. That's going to be the same premise now for this, to make many, many in business and industry have to report material or payments, ransomware payments, things like that. But we now need to distinguish between business interruption planning, incident response planning, disaster recovery for when your organization is hit in primarily versus when your supply chain, your those who you're dependent upon are hit, right? Because a lot of organizations now have outsourced just about everything IT related.
Yeah.
And so What is the, I just had this conversation this morning with someone who's in this struggle, and I don't know the answer for him, but he's like, we have gone to Microsoft with just about everything now. And my disaster recovery plan is if Microsoft goes down, we're hosed because we have nothing else. We're fully embedded. And so how do you handle resilience or business interruption when you are dependent wholly upon some other service provider and that service provider gets hit? Do we now have two service providers where you got my primary and my redundant going? If we're an airplane, we would, right? Yeah. But are we, you know, budgetarily speaking, are we able to accomplish that? I don't know. I don't know where we go with that.
Do you lose, what do you lose going to single point of failure to having either a ton of different things, right? So you get the complexity of I got this, 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 and this, and every one of them now is a point of failure and an entry point into my system versus the one, or I bring it all in house and now I don't have the expertise to be able to manage that directly either. And I'm still a single point of failure.
Yeah.
At some point there's got to be someone that you're trusting saying, listen, we're putting our eggs in this basket. And you know, if Microsoft or Amazon or Google goes down, yeah, we're hosed, but so is pretty much the rest of everybody else, right? Like,
yeah,
I use Amazon and Amazon went down. I'm not the only one sitting here, you know, looking around.
Yeah. And, you know, James, this goes back to, you know, principles that have been around for a decade or more, which are when you're trusting of a third party with some important part of your services, you can't just blindly go, aha, you know, tag, you're it. I'm not my problem anymore. People thought that for a long time, but it is your problem. You're still responsible for it. But that's when you started seeing these principles come out that you've got to use reasonable diligence to investigate the party you're doing business with and placing this trust in. You've got to have contractual provisions that obligate them to do certain things. And then you need to have the right to audit to make sure they're doing what they promised you they would do. Working with a Microsoft or an Amazon, you're dealing with a reputable party, which is much different than if you're dealing with, you know, something,
some,
you know,
startup.
Four high school kids, yeah, threw together with a fancy website and they're exposing your data, you know, the whole database on Google. I've had that case. So, I mean, you know, it's that continuum of where do we fit
right
on this risk?
Yeah, continuum. But I'll flip that on you, Sean, and say that, you know, I don't know if I'm opposing counsel, if I'd rather sit across the table from Microsoft or the kids in a garage.
Well, yeah, you're not getting anything from either one of them, probably. So, I
mean, well, that's the
one
thing,
is
right?
The old blood and turnip defense, right? Can't squeeze blood out of a turnip. The other one is our contracts are bulletproof. We haven't indemnified you for anything.
Right.
You know, we've carved all this out, no reliance, blah, blah, blah.
And we can keep, and we can throw 700, you know, $10,000 an hour lawyers at this until you go bankrupt, and we will win anyway. You can't win this. Yeah. This is the this is the annoying part, and you know why I'm more convinced than ever that Jeremiah's Grossman's concept of like software liability or liability, all these idiotic click through agreements that like, hey, we're selling you the software, but boy, whatever it does after you click this button, that's not our problem. Can you imagine?
You're not relying on it. You're not going to use it. You're not depending on it other reason.
John, can you imagine getting on an airplane and they're like, all right, well, after you get on this thing, whatever happens, like this is on you. You accept all the – nobody would do it. And yet why do we do it with software?
Well, because they've got the market cornered.
Yeah, unlike airlines, software is not regulated. Right? Any Joe Schmo could go in, pick up a computer and start writing apps, you know? I mean, anybody can put something out there.
Is that the thing, Sean? Did James just say the magic words where the next step is the government's going to be like, "All right, we're regulating stuff." I mean,
well, Yeah, I mean,
don't chill software development.
That's the way everything else goes, is politicians get reelected by promising to do stuff. How do they do stuff? They pass stupid laws that nobody's going to follow that make no sense, but they can say, look what I did, point to it, and get reelected.
And isn't that what we do now? I mean, we're constantly seeing new things come out, regulations or whatever it may be, trying to push. I was just talking to somebody this morning about OWASP top 10, you know, with that start out like 10 things, right? The fundamentals, like if you do these 10 things, but if you break OWASP top 10 down into CWE, it's like 200 things, you know, and you're like, okay, wait a minute. So the top 10 fundamentals are really do everything. Don't skip anything. Like, you have to do it all.
These are broad.
Right. Like, they're super broad.
Kind of like the EU's AI principles.
Yeah. Like, we could boil it to the top AI. One. Secure your stuff. Right. Like that. You know, but it starts doing that. And you look at these other ones. You look at like NIST. You look at CISA has that software assurance attestation that you can do now, right? Where you can sign off and there's 8 things in their attestation, but you compare that to like the NIST document for software assurance, and it's all but like 2 sections of that. You know what I mean? So it's like, well, it started out as 8, but it really references 33 over here in the NIST document. And then from the NIST document, it references 675 from these other 18 documents. But we've boiled it down to these high level, just do this. But then when you actually realize it, like this is like, you're building the whole house. I'm no longer putting a floor in. I got to do the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, when you generalize up like that, you can capture a lot within a very, you know, simple statement sometimes. And I mean, it comes back to the fact that, you know, they may have 475 things to do and they did 474 of them, but that 475th one, somebody found it wasn't done, got in, right, used it, and despite
kaboom,
you know, best efforts to the contrary. I mean, that's the challenge. I don't envy the role of the CISO these days.
Okay, Sean, we got a couple more minutes. I'm going to ask you a couple kind of rapid fire questions. Is the state of preparedness any better this year than it was last year with the people you're talking to and the ones that call you?
I think we're improving.
All right.
We're improving, but we've got a lot to do. We still struggle with the most basic fundamentals so we've got 2 things. One, preparing to secure your environment, right?
Yeah.
And then preparing incident response preparation. The state of incident response preparation, we're doing a whole lot of stuff, but we're still neglecting to figure out who our team is, to know how to reach them when we need them. And then cyber insurance comes in and says, oh, you have this team over here. Y'all have been working together for 3 years. Oh, no, no. Now you're going to use this team today, right? Get started.
Yeah.
Because they didn't go through the process of getting their team approved and doing all that. So we're still missing a lot with that, but we are improving.
Okay. Question number 2, are the, you know, where you see, the incidents happen on the ransomware side, is the ransom demands getting higher, lower, or the same?
I think it's staying about the same. We're still seeing high 6 figures, low 7 figures as an initial demand in a majority of cases, and those getting negotiated down to mid to low 6 figures.
Okay.
But there again, it depends on, or an encryption event is still more valuable than just a data theft.
Yeah.
So if you have encryption plus data theft, we're seeing a much lower appetite for paying a ransom if it's just data theft.
Okay.
Because the data's already been breached.
Yeah, it's gone.
The data breach occurred the minute they acquired that data and pulled it out of your network,
yeah,
right? So you can't cure the data breach by paying a ransom like you can get a decryptor from paying a ransom. So you still have to go through your data breach notification process and all of that. It's going to become public, the whole 9 yards. So what's really the point of paying the ransom now? It's mainly to keep them from harassing and targeting the individuals personally. And how much is that worth?
Yikes. Okay. That's not the bright picture I was hoping for. Is the volume of work getting any less?
No. It's you know, we see still a lot of ransomware, but you know where we've also really seen a lot over the last couple of years, and it's not backing off, is phishing, basic, simple business email compromise cases. Because one BEC, that's an access to an email account and thereby access to all the data in that account. And if you don't have the right licenses and logging to show exactly what occurred when that threat actor was in that account, you've got to presume they acquired the data that was in it. So now think about most companies' email accounts for any one individual. You know, you've got years worth of data just sitting there in that file. And now you got to go through and figure out who all's data and notify them and all that. So they're bad. And the wire fraud. We are seeing so many of these wire fraud cases where they're playing, you know, man in the middle or monkey in the middle, however you want to look at it, and intercepting wire transfer instructions, and people are falling for it. And another one we've seen several cases of in the last couple of months is where they'll phish someone in like accounting and get a list of AR. Say, send me, you know, this is a CEO, whatever. Send me the AR with email addresses and amounts due and all that for everybody over 60 days or 30 days, whatever. And the person in accounting will comply, send them the Excel spreadsheet, and literally within minutes, they're now sending phishing emails to all of those accounts, to all of those companies, and getting payments wired to them.
It's like now they have real data. Oh, man.
Are you seeing?
Yeah, and they never, and it was never even an unauthorized access.
Right.
Into the primary company's account. It was, they tricked someone into providing them the data, but you know.
Yeah.
Are you able to see with those type of situations how much AI is playing a part in being able to take that stuff apart and build up custom emails or anything like that? Or is that still really more of a templated manual part?
I think it's more fun to talk about the AI right now doing that than it is the actual emails doing it. Because I'm going to tell you, James, when you look at these emails, they're still misspelling. They're still making grammatical. You look at it and you go, oh, my God, come on. How'd you fall for this? You know, they're not using AI to come up, at least the ones I've seen.
I was thinking you were saying AI was doing misspellings, and I guess like AI is pretty smart. All you have to say is AI, create me a phishing email, and it's like, let me misspell this.
That would be an upgrade on what these are. These are your basic, Nigerian prints in today's
terms.
Because I've seen some newer phishing emails coming out, like from testing platforms that, you know, they're using AI, they're you know, they're using manager names. They're like, it looks pretty legit, you know, like compared to what we've been used to, you know, where it's like, oh, come on now. Like, please. Like, that's not,
we're still getting the all come on now ones.
yeah. All right, guys, we're out of time on this one. But thanks, Sean, for painting that bright and sunny picture of a bright future where all of us are never leaving our jobs because this is never going to end. All right. Well, you know, people are always going to need firefighters no matter how many sprinkler systems you install. So, yeah. All right. Well, next time I want to talk about insurance and the role of kind of incident responders and kind of how that's all going. But we'll save that for our next Tuesdays with Tuma. Who knows?
That sounds great. It's always fun.
All right, Sean, thanks a lot for your time, buddy. It's great seeing you. Folks, thanks for listening. And for myself and James for the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. We'll catch you guys later. Don't forget, catch us on LinkedIn. Things stream there. Go to the YouTube page and sign up there. Some good video. We record our podcasts and stream them there. You can watch the live videos. You can see us all making faces and being just thoroughly, thoroughly happy about some of these topics, as you can tell in my voice. And then the occasional cat that shows up in my office here and that likes to put the tail on camera. So, all right, that's it. It's great seeing you guys all. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys another time, another place on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Cue the music. We're out. See you later. Bye-bye.
This is Bella. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to leave my dad a review and share this with your friends. Bye.